Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Universal Analytics is dead. Perhaps you've been living in denial. Perhaps you just missed the warnings, but it truly is gone and Google Analytics 4 is here to replace it. But let me tell you, setting up Google Analytics 4 is not easy. And the learning curve from Universal Analytics to Google Analytics 4 is pretty steep. If you want to accelerate your knowledge of Google Analytics 4 and want complete faith that the data you're collecting is accurate and you're reporting on the things that matter to your business, please get in touch. Over the last 18 months, we've helped businesses learn, understand, and migrate to Google Analytics 4. And the short of it is, the faster you migrate, the better. Get in contact with us at sitevisibility.co.uk or email us grow@sitevisibility.com. In today's episode, I'm joined by Claire Carlisle, local search expert at Bright Local. Claire has been working in local search for the last 8 years, and today she joins us to share her tips on how to level up your Google business profile. Enjoy the episode.
This is Internet Marketing.
Describe a little bit about your role at Bright Local and also what else that you do. I know that you're a speaker. I've been reading your blog posts. What else do you do?
So at Bright Local, I am the local search expert, which basically means that I get to write lots of content. I get to write and record courses for the academy. I also get to go to events and speak. And it's lovely to be involved with all of the processes within Bright Local for their software as a service and also their content teams. And so that's what I do there. And then I am also a chartered marketer. So I work for myself at Claire Carlisle Marketing, working with all sorts of businesses, but mostly those with some sort of local presence.
You mentioned that you're a writer, you've written lots of posts. I am curious, is ChatGPT now part of your process? How are you using it?
I am not using it.
That was very firm.
I guess that I will be a late adopter. You know, I've played around with it. I am going to just read what other people write about it in terms of these are ways that you can use it as a process when people come up with their ideas about what that is. Because at the moment, I'm perfectly happy cracking on as I am, based on my understanding of people and what they need.
Now, I could just ask ChatGPT or Google this, but last night, actually, as I was doing some research and just reading some of your posts, I came across, you had presented a slide in one of your articles, and you talked about the fact you're a local speaker, writer, and then you said that Welsh cake aficionado.
Yeah.
And I've never heard, what is a Welsh cake? I don't know what a Welsh cake is.
Oh, have you, Scott, where have you been? Have you lived?
What's going on? I don't think so. Apparently not.
Okay, well, a Welsh cake is how can we put it? If you know what a sort of drop scone is, so it's like a sort of very flat scone and it has fruit in it and they're sort of cooked on a griddle. So they're sweet and you can have them warmed and sometimes they have butter on them. But we've got a Welsh cake maker here where I live in Solver, which is called Mamgi, and they make all different amazing flavours. So Welsh cakes, they're life. So it basically became a little bit of a thing in that I'm from Wales. So I tended to take Welsh cakes to events with me and then handed them out to my favourite people.
Ah, spreading the word. That makes sense. Well, again, spreading the word on this podcast as well. If you've never had a Welsh cake like me or don't even know what they are, go try them.
You can get them. You don't need to be in Wales. I think they have them in Sainsbury's. Other supermarkets are available. Scott, I'll send you some Welsh cakes because I feel like this needs to happen in your life, really.
Thanks. I am interested in how you got started. I'm interested in anyone that focuses on a niche, finds a specialism in marketing. You clearly have this specialism in local search. When did that happen in your career? Like, how did you end up focusing on local search?
That's a really interesting question because it's something that I always ask myself when I look at other people that I'm like, oh, why do you do this thing? What happened? Where did that come from? So I started off working for an adventure company. And then this was 22 years ago. And then thinking about, oh, well, you know, they have a website. Let me learn about website things. And then I got to, well, let me learn about SEO things about 20 years ago. And then I thought, oh, marketing is an interesting niche. Everyone needs marketing. I think I'll be a marketer. So I did a master's in marketing and then thought that I would just wanted to work with sort of small and medium-sized businesses on their marketing. And from there, I ended up working, you know, in tourism and hospitality, a lot of people with a local focus. And from there, I decided to niche down properly into local. When I pitched my first Brighton SEO, which was about, I don't know, how long ago was that? 8 years ago. And then I thought, oh, I better learn all the things and really specialize in this thing. So that's what I did. And then I chose it because it was, one, it was very relevant to the clients that I was serving. And it was nice people and it was an exciting little niche, really, because I was really interested in Google Maps and the technology. And it's an easy thing to focus on if you're an actual buyer and user of things and you like going out into the world and seeing and doing stuff. Then local is really relevant. So it was very easy for me to learn it in a way because I was actually the consumer of that product a lot of the time.
You've been in the local space, what did you say, maybe 8 to 10 years? Is that about right?
I mean, in the space in terms of shameless self-promotion. Yeah. But I think in the space, as in I have been like working with local businesses for about 20 years, but then really niching down probably for the last 8 years or so.
A lot has changed. So, you know, in this episode today, we're going to be talking about Google Business Profile. It's had so many names and changes, even over the last decade.
Yeah.
What's top of mind for me is that anyone listens to this, you will probably have seen the changes happening with Google Analytics, Universal Analytics to Google Analytics 4. And I'm just thinking about over the last decade, the number of changes with Google Business Profile. Can you even remember, are any of the names of the previous names top of mind for you? What name variations have you gone through?
Probably for me, it's Places and then Google Business and now Google Business Profile. So before that, I can't remember what it was. I think that I love the historical aspect of how this has changed, you know, Mike Blumenthal. David Mim and reading stuff by them, you really get a feel for what it used to look like. We're all obsessed with how the SERPs used to look and how easy everything used to be. So we're, you know, as SEOs and marketers, we do harp on about that quite a lot. So the map space and the local space has been very interesting, I think, in terms of changes.
And do you like the current state as a user? So, or as a, like someone that's looking through the business lens that has to add their information, add posts, track performance, do you find it useful in its current state?
Try and adopt the attitude that, you know, it is essentially a free product. It is what it is. We're not going to get anywhere by moaning about changes. That's just Google's MO, isn't it, really? So, We crack on and we do the best that we can. And another thing we need to do is just make sure that we don't put all of our eggs in the Google basket, which is, making sure that you have got ways to reach your market in other ways that aren't just based around Google and the local product offering.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we won't be speaking about all of those in today's episode, but maybe in the future, coming on, talk about non-Google related platforms would be useful as well. But speaking about the Google space and Google Google Business Profile, you recently released an article about tracking And it really, I thought it was a really good breakdown of all of the different ways in which you can track links and just interactions on Google Business Profile, on your Google Business Profile platform.
Mm-hmm.
We won't go through in this episode the how. That doesn't really translate to audio very well, tracking. But I am interested to know more from you about why and what you should be tracking. So just starting off with Google, I keep getting it wrong myself. I keep going to say Google My Business because it's been ingrained in my head for so long. But going through Google Business Profile tracking, what should people be tracking? If you could just break down all of the things that people should be tracking.
Okay, so I think that piece I updated recently just to include a little tiny token bit on GA4, but I wrote that piece originally probably about, 5 years ago? So it was when it was still GMB. So thinking about the things that you can track with the Google Business Profile, you have Google Insights or Google Performance or whatever they're calling it this week. That's another thing that has changed in terms of metrics being removed and different ways of accessing that information. So Google tells us some very useful information about actions that are taken on the business profile itself. So not things that happen on your website. So you have phone calls, direction requests is a really useful metric because it shows intent to visit. We can see clicks on the primary website link via Google Business Profile Insights. What else can we see? We can see we have got data about the search queries that people are using to surface your listing. Well, my mind has gone absolutely blank now, but those are the main things that we have in there. If you've got bookings, it will give you data on bookings if you are able to use that within GMB, and it will also tell us about the number of messages if you have messaging turned on. It changes quite frequently, so it is a good idea to log into your insights quite frequently just to have a look to see if anything has changed. If you're not using the API and you're not using a third-party tool to pull that data in, then definitely go in and have a little poke around and see what it's showing in there.
Of all those data points that you just broke down there, are there any that you find are commonly missed from the businesses that you interact with?
All of them, most of them, just because the idea, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, when we get around to sort of reporting frameworks, though, all of those things in Google Business Profile are pretty business critical, aren't they? You know, phone call is, you know, in terms of intent, all of those actions are pretty essential. So pulling those things into one dashboard somewhere, being able to compare those metrics, looking at them in terms of directionality, you know, are we getting more phone calls, less phone calls, why might that be? I think that actually analysing those metrics, making sense of them and using them to answer business critical questions is something that's often overlooked with a lot of businesses.
And as you were talking, you also mentioned that you recently updated the small part of the article to include, I think, the GA4 parameters or some GA. I think I remember reading the article that you said, even though these new parameters are introduced in GA4, you're not using any of the new parameters just because they're not necessary. Was that right? Have I remembered that correctly?
Yeah. For me, what we didn't look at there when we talked about metrics, we just looked about the GBP stuff. What we didn't do is talk about the whole reason that we add UTM tagging is because Google doesn't give us any information about what people that come from Google Business Profile then go on to do on our website. So there's lots of other bits in there. There's a massive, pretty big measurement piece within that. So I think with the GA4 switchover, if you have been using UTM tracked URLs to feed into your reporting and your measurement framework, then, like, you know, I see myself as a pretty typical marketer in the sense that a bit of a last minute panic. Everything was set up in GA4. I just don't necessarily understand everything about it. I think that's probably quite common. So my question for myself was, how's my UTM tagging, how I actually drill down into that data, what's the difference between UA and GA4. So there are these additional parameters that have been added to the UTM tracking framework. I don't think that Google is actually using them at the moment. That was my understanding of it. So I just flagged them up. But if someone has implemented UTM tagging using the framework that I suggest in my piece, nothing changes in GA4 apart from how you actually access and pull that data out. So it's still a robust framework in terms of you don't need to go and change your UTM tagging for GA4.
Okay, yeah. And on the topic of UTM tagging, I've seen this come up frequently over the years. Tools or systems that help with the management of UTM tracking to keep it consistent. Any you recommend? What do you recommend?
I recommend, first of all, thinking about how data is managed within your organization. So if you have someone that looks after data and reporting, then I think popping in and having a chat with them about what your suggestions might be with UTM, you need to work out whether or not it's going to balk their framework and whether or not your suggestions might be robbing traffic from one department that might not be very happy about it. So that's probably the first step is make sure that what you're planning to implement fits within an existing framework. If there isn't an existing framework, then it's quite likely that the framework that I set out in my UTM tagging magic sheet will probably work for your organization.
And the other thing that you were talking about that was really interesting to me was the you mentioned API, and I thought to myself, I actually haven't really ever thought or looked at the Google Business Profile API. So when you're the metrics that we've talked about, the things that we're able to track, and just the Google Business Profile metrics that we can access via API, do you tend to take that information and report on it using something like Looker Studio? What's your process for reporting on Google Business Profile information typically?
Yes. So generally, the Google Business Profile specific data and also the Google Analytics data, I pull everything then into a Looker Studio report. So I can look at both of those things, have like a monthly dashboard plus a sort of yearly metrics. So everything gets pulled into that generally.
And is that something you'd recommend for most businesses? Is there any reason to do that? I guess it's because you don't want to be splitting your time between Google Analytics and Google Business Profile for your information, right?
I guess that it brings everything into one place and you become, in a way, I don't know if this is the right word, platform agnostic in a way. So if you're measuring the things that you need to measure in one place and then you decide you're working with a different provider for you know, to get the API data, you don't have to worry about that because it's all coming via one source, which is actually the GMB API. The thing is, there is no native connector for Looker Studio. So you do need to, if you're doing that, then you need to find a connector that's going to work for you.
Any connectors that you recommend?
Or am I allowed? Obviously, there's a Supermetrics connector. And then it all depends on how much money you've got, how many locations you've got. I personally use Jepto, which has a free connector. I think it's not for very many locations. And then Jepto do a very, I don't see myself as a data person. So it does the clever stuff where it pulls it off into the secret place in the cloud. And then you can then pull that back down. Basically, it's all via BigQuery, la la thingies. So that is Jepto. And that can, you can pull, you know, you put together your, they have a template, but you can also put together your own reports. They're very responsive, helpful. So that's what I have used up until now. But just working on new dashboards myself, because that's the thing is GA4 gives us this chance to be very almost, you know, to start again in terms of, okay, well, this is the data we've been pulling. Let's go back to how this actually serves the business. You know, let's have a look at our goals. Let's have a look at our events. Let's have a look at what we're measuring and why we're measuring it. So rather than just sort of slavishly trying to basically copy that over, it gives us a chance to say, is this still important to the business? Is this still a data point that we need to measure? So for all of my clients, it's given us a really good opportunity to not even think about how we're measuring. It's thinking about what we're measuring, why we're measuring it, and what the business is going to do with that data. So it has been a nice fresh start.
And what was the name of the second connector that you said there? Was it Jepto?
Jepto. Jepto.
Right. Thanks. That's great. I've never heard of that. So that's really good advice. Thanks for sharing.
Okay.
I want to move on to another aspect of Google Business Profiles, an area which I'm really interested in, which is Google Posts. This is also referenced in the article, which again, I'll link to in the show notes that you've produced. You'll probably hate me for saying this, but I am interested in your experience. But my experience with Google Posts, maybe you've heard this before, is that when Google Posts were first released as an option, I was kind of excited. I was curious. I was like, what is this? We posted a lot from our agency, mm-hmm. I think like maybe weekly or twice a week. Mm. And then at some point, we just stopped. And mm-hmm. I'd like to say that for us, we probably stopped because the data wasn't like showing that it was worth our efforts or something mm-hmm. to that effect. Mm. I honestly can't say with certainty that that was true. Mm. And I just realized that coming into this episode, I actually don't know the current status of Google Posts and really what's happening with them. So tell me about Google Posts. Are you seeing them used effectively for businesses? Is there hope for people out there using Google Posts?
I think there is, especially if they manage their expectation about what they are and what they do and who they're for. So, you know, Google Posts, when it was first released in terms of then, you know, most people had access to it. Obviously, some niches didn't, hotels didn't at the time. And so it was seen as like, it's a micro blogging platform, but it very much isn't that. If you think about where people are in their user journey, when they view your Google Business Profile, they're really not a fanatical fan that is checking in on what you have posted on Google Posts. So I think that's the first thing, is understand where the consumers of that content are in terms of their journey. So posts, obviously, if you UTM tag everything up and you have a framework for that, if you spend however many minutes a month doing Google Posts, then you can see, is this doing anything for me? But generally, I think, you know, there's quite a torrid and exciting history of Google Posts I won't go into now, because they move around the business profile, they populate different parts, or they have in the past, of the SERP in terms of justifications. So it is changing all the time in terms of how Google might use them to understand more about your business entity, where they might use them as a justification in the SERP. But generally, I think that Google is changing. So they're splitting out, I think, in part, special offers posts. As a business, I would always make sure that I had one or two special offer posts or some sort of post which effectively communicates some sort of value added offering. So you could put those live, and you can have like quite a long date on those. If you're the type of business that doesn't have special offers, that is a monthly special offer, you might find that there's something that you can put in for 6 months. So in a way, it's partly set it and forget it, apart from making sure that the URL that it links to, you know, still actually gives a 200 status code. This is one of the things that we forget about, is we're actually using the content on our website. So let's just make sure that we manage that content. So special offers posts, very important. And then Google obviously wanted everyone to post posts all the time. They only used to last for 2 weeks in the business profile, which was another reason we were all thinking, oh, we need to publish regularly. They sit there for 6 months now. So if you have got some sort of messaging which isn't, oh, I'll post a link to my blog, it's something that is going to be important in terms of helping a customer make a decision to choose your business over another. So maybe an amazing review, an awesome bit of news where you've got an award, or it could be because there's a new product or something like that. That's the type of thing that I would be thinking about posting, and then I'd be making sure that I tag that up appropriately so I can see what types of posts in terms of what content is moving the needle and actually giving some sort of return when and if that traffic hits my website. Because Google Business Profile doesn't give us data on posts anymore. That's purely, we can get that when we UTM tag our post-op and we go and look at that data in GA4.
Bringing this to life for me and our listeners, are there any businesses, these can be businesses that Bright Local have worked with or you've worked with, or just any favourite examples you have of businesses that are utilising Google Posts really well?
Really well. I will just say Folly Farm Adventure Park and Zoo, which I always use as my example because they're like my, am I allowed to say it's my favourite client? It's difficult to not have amazing content when you've got like baby animals being born and there are like sloths and rhinos. But basically Folly Farm, for me, that's one of my favourite clients to sort of work on their Google business profile, because we're never short of content, never short of stories, never short of great images. So we just keep it sort of reasonably fresh. And I will see revenue being driven by all parts of the Google business profile, but, you know, especially products and ticketing. So just keeping it fresh. It's not something that you just do once and then sit there. You do need to actually check to see what you've got going on in your Google business profile and checking your analytics to see, well, what is actually making a difference? You know, have you got ticketing? If you've got ticketing, are you UTM tagging up those links so you can see, you know, how much revenue that's driving, or how many newsletter subscriptions, or how many clicks out to social profiles, or whatever it is that's either sort of a conversion or a micro conversion on your website that's going to be useful for your business.
Mm. And are Google posts still limited to text and graphics, i.e. no video?
No, I think you can have video. There used to be a little workaround, so you can, was that just on products? I think it was, where you used to be able to have GIFs. That was quite good fun. But that's not working. No, I think you can have video. I think so.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check that. And when you produce content for Google Posts, so for example, at the moment, like Canva is really popular for producing content and then repurposing. Mm. Are there any tools that you use to help you in the production of Google Posts that would be interesting for listeners to hear about?
Not terrifically. I think, yeah, like you say, Canva. There is on Bright Local, I wrote a guide to Google Posts, which gives you a template in Canva that we produced. It gives you the general, you know, it changes all the time because obviously Google posts look very different depending on how Google is actually showing them in the interface, what device you're using. So I think one of the biggest things is come up with a simple template, use it, and then just keep an eye on how it looks. One thing that I do is I use Mobile Moxie, so I know what my business profile is looking like, you know, either daily or weekly or monthly across devices. It's just a good way to keep an eye on how Google is surfacing the information that you're pushing into Google.
And I wanted to close today's episode on another really important part of local marketing in general, but particularly important to Google business profile, and that's Google reviews. And I say that with a level of assumption. I'm assuming that it's still a really important part of local search. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think reviews are important from like a ranking perspective, and obviously super important from a conversion perspective. So sorting out your reviews, getting more reviews, learning from your reviews and your competitor reviews is always very high up on the priority list when I work with clients.
I figured that would be a safe assumption of mine, so thank you for confirming.
Very, very safe, yeah. No, reviews aren't important, Scott. Don't
bother. So I still get a lot of questions, and we as a business still get a lot of questions on ways to secure reviews. I often get the question, can you incentivize reviews still? For you, what are some recommendations for encouraging reviews?
Okay. And before you get onto the encouraging reviews part, I always remind the business, are you ready to receive reviews?
Oh, okay. Go for it. So,
are you ready? Is your product ready? Is your delivery of the product or service ready? Because a lot of the time people can obsess about getting reviews, but they forget that there needs to be a foundational piece that makes sure that you have a product or service that is worth reviewing and that it's going to lead you to have the best reviews. So that's always useful beforehand. And then in terms of actually getting reviews, I think one of the most powerful ways to get reviews is to ask for them. People often leave that piece out. Lots of different ways to ask for reviews. Think about where you need those reviews. Obviously, we're talking about Google Business Profile, but it's quite likely that your sort of local knowledge panel could be pulling in reviews from around the web. So you need to keep an eye on that, understand what it's pulling in and from where, because it might be that you need to do a little bit of triage somewhere else. And asking at the right time, using the right words is important. Understanding how the review request and the review ask sits within the sort of the delivery of the whole of the framework of your product or service and who does it. And also, like, with the different ways to ask, you know, there's emails, there's visual asks, there might be text. You just need to find out where the sweet spot is. I think something that people, two things I think that people forget is, one, try and work out if you have basically you have a process for reviews which doesn't really see that much human attention from inside your organization. Sending a review request to someone that's had a difficult experience or that has not actually attended whatever it was they were booked onto is probably not going to get you a good review. So coming up with a way to make sure that you're only asking the people that it's relevant for is a good idea. And then another thing that people forget to do with reviews is to actually make sense of that data in terms of it's not just a happy sheet. We need to look at the corpus of the reviews, work out what the themes are, work out how we can improve our product and service delivery, looking at the positives that people highlight so we can use that elsewhere in our marketing. To, you know, basically differentiate ourselves from our competitors. And the same thing is using the corpus of, you know, textual content in competitors' reviews to understand what it is that are their strengths and their weaknesses that you can learn from. So basically, I see reviews as a lot of a mirror into the soul of a business in many ways. So making sure that you make the most of those is really important.
As you were talking, you mentioned the right words to use. I'm just going to break that down a little bit.
Yes.
So could you maybe provide some examples of some good phrases or good ways to request reviews? And then maybe does anything come top of mind for you about phrases to avoid, things that you see where people constantly ask for reviews, they're not getting them, and you just see it over and over again?
Yeah, I think the in terms of if you've got some sort of process and you're asking over and over and again, however many reminders you're doing as part of an automated process, I think everyone needs to look at that because, you know, if you're sending a review request and an ask again and then another ask after 3 weeks, but you're only seeing like a 0.5% conversion or whatever, it's probably not worth sending. You know, you're more likely to make people cross and upset with you than you are to actually get what you want, which is ideally a positive review. And in terms of the actual ask, there's lots of stuff that has been, you know, written recently on how, you know, what are the best types of reviews. Obviously, textual content is good. More textual content is better. Reviews with a photo are great. Reviews that use the words, your sort of whatever your service offering is, those are really good as well. Because reviews can often be pulled through by Google into justification. So if someone's making a search for, orthodontistry for children or something, and then you have got reviews which are about those things, then it's quite likely that Google could pull the content from that review through into the SERP, into the three-pack to sort of highlight your listing. So one of the ways that you can do that is, so rather than saying, we hope you like the thing that you did with us, please write us a review. You could say, I hope that, you know, it all depends on whether or not, if you're a small business, I think you'll see a really, really good rate of response and you'll get very full reviews the more personalized that you can be. So I hope that your dog, Benji, enjoyed his grooming session with Kath at our Brighton parlour. Blah, 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 blah. Don't forget to, you know, hope you have a nice holiday in Cyprus or whatever it is. Obviously, the more personalised you are and using the either the attributes, you know, what do you want to be known for? Do you want to be family friendly? Do you want to be cost effective? Do you want to be good for students? Whatever. If you're using some of those words in your review ask, it is more likely that people will also use those types of words in their review. The same way if you ask them questions. So you can be quite leading in terms of the words that you use, but I think it's finding the sweet spot for businesses in terms of, well, what can we actually do internally given the resource that we have? Because not everyone has 5 minutes to write down, you know, or 10 minutes to do this like amazingly personalized review request. But if you're the type of business that, you know, has a high value product that people won't choose that many times, then putting a little bit more time and effort into your review requests might mean that you're getting better quality and more reviews.
I think there's loads of great advice there. And you provided a really good fictional example of like the words to use to encourage reviews. Final question. Are there any businesses out there that just you think do a really good job of this, encouraging reviews? Any that come top of mind?
I can only think personally when I might buy something from Etsy or somewhere where someone has handcrafted and made something and they actually have a handwritten note. With a review. So it's like in terms of thinking about how we can do that digitally or not digitally. You know, we might be actually crafting something which is an amazing message, which then asks for a digital review or otherwise. But I really think for me, that is guaranteed, basically. I'm going to spend 10 minutes, you know, taking photos of that product and saying how amazing it is and getting that review posted. So for me, that's probably the best. I don't think I'm a good example of people that respond well to review requests. especially if it's, you know, automated is fine, but it needs to be at the right time using the right words.
And if people do want to find you, so they want to find out more about you, Bright Local, some of the topics and content that we've been talking about today, where can people find you?
So I am on Twitter at Claire Carlisle. Bright Local is Bright Local. They've got gazillions and they've got great content about Google Business Profile. Obviously, they have an amazing platform in terms of tracking and monitoring for tools, but everything is over at Bright Local. And don't forget the Academy, which is on a subdomain. I think it's academybrightlocal.com, where there are lots of, and I do say amazing because they are, the quality is incredible, and they're free courses all about local marketing stuff. So if anyone is right, really keen to upskill and learn a bit more, then I would recommend starting there.
Claire, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Really fun to learn about what's happening in Google Business Profile. For now, I just say thanks for your time, and this has been the Internet Marketing Podcast. Take care.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.